Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the ICICI Prudential Life Insurance Company Limited 9 months FY 2022 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. N.S. Kannan, MD and CEO of ICICI Prudential Life Insurance. Thank you and over to you, sir.
Thank you. I hope I am audible.
Yes, sir, you are. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Good evening to you all and welcome to the results call of ICICI Prudential Life Insurance Company for the 9 months ended December 31st of the current financial year 2022. I have several of my senior colleagues with me on the call. Satyan Jambunathan, the CFO, Judhajit Das, who heads Human Resources, Customer Service and Operations, Amit Palta, who heads Distribution, Brand and Marketing and Products, Deepak Kinger, who is responsible for Audit, Legal, Risk and Compliance, Manish Kumar, who manages investments, Shavik Josh, appointed actuary, Dhiren Salian, our deputy CFO, and Mukesh Bubana from the investor relations team. As you are aware, as a country, we are seeing a fresh surge in COVID-19 infections beginning the last week of December 2021. Our thoughts are with the families who are grappling with health issues, lost lives, and livelihood issues. We continue to follow COVID-19 safety protocols at our branches and of our employees. 99% have got single dose and 92% have got both doses of vaccination. While several of our employees have been infected in the last couple of weeks, most of them are either asymptomatic or have mild symptoms, with less than 1% of them being hospitalized. We have re-emphasized the COVID-19 protocols and launched a 24/7 dedicated helpline to facilitate physical and mental health counseling, RT-PCR testing, including isolation centers, as well as provision of hospital beds, oxygen support and ambulance. Work from home and isolation have once again become the norm, and our systems as well as processes are fully geared for remote working. Wherever warranted, we have also practiced proactive isolation to ensure effective business continuity. In terms of the impact of the fresh surge in COVID-19 on mortality claims, the initial sense we are getting is that though there may be a sharp spike in infections, the resultant mortality is not expected to be high given the increased level of vaccination in the country and the reported nature of the symptoms of this new variant. We have covered the details of the impact of COVID-19 on mortality claims as well as the additional amount provided as of December 2021. Later in the presentation. So before that, let me start by talking about a couple of developments during the quarter before moving on to our performance. I'm happy to inform you that during the quarter, we have won multiple awards across business functions. Our customer mobile app has won silver in the best mobile app of the year category in the Velocity Awards 2021. We also won ETBFSI Excellence in Innovation Award in the best use of emerging technology for business growth category for our humanoid, a voice bot for renewal premium reminder calling. Further, the League of American Communications Professionals LLC has awarded us with gold in 2021 Spotlight Awards for Excellence for our annual report of financial year 2021. We believe these awards are a testimony to our responsiveness to the environment, our ability to innovate, as well as meeting the expectations of our stakeholders. And these give us the confidence to set newer benchmarks as we move forward. As you may know, we started our ESG journey in financial year 2020 by enhancing disclosures on our practices and have been taking various steps to incorporate ESG principles in our day-to-day business activities. During the quarter, we have become a signatory to the United Nations Principles for Responsible Investment, the first insurance company in India to do so. We are happy to note that our initiatives and progress on ESG front are now getting reflected in improvement in ESG ratings and scores given by some of the external agencies. Moving on to products, we enhanced our product suite further by adding two new products during the quarter. We launched an income plan, GIFT Long Term, which provides customers a guaranteed income for up to 30 years along with life cover. We also launched a term plan with return of premium. It has two innovative features. First, the insurance cover gets automatically adjusted based on the customer's life stage. Second, it provides financial cover against 64 critical illnesses, which is one of the most comprehensive and widest in the industry. I will now move on to our performance for the quarter. Our four key strategic elements, that is premium growth, protection business growth, persistency improvement, and productivity enhancement, continue to guide us towards our objective of growing the absolute value of new business while ensuring that our customer is at the core of everything we do. This, as always, is depicted in our slide four. I will talk through our performance on the four P's through slide five to 10 of our presentation and then conclude with a commentary on the VNB. Let me start with the first P of our strategic elements, which is premium growth. Our annualized premium equivalent, APE, grew by 16% to rupees 19.29 billion in Q3 of FY 2022, resulting in a 30% year-on-year growth for the nine months ended December 2021. Our total new business premium for the nine months ended December 2021 also grew by 30% year-on-year. Within this, our retail new business premium actually grew at a higher rate of 38% year-on-year. Our market share based on retail weighted received premium stood at 7.4% for the nine months of this fiscal as compared to 7.22% for the last fiscal. The strong growth in premium was driven by our diversified product mix as well as the distribution mix. For the nine months of this financial year, the contribution from linked savings products stood at  50%, non-linked savings at 29%, protection at 17%, and balance 4% from group savings. Within non-linked saving products, if you can look at the chart, annuity was 4% of our total APE. On the distribution front, we continue to maintain a diversified distribution mix. In our nine-month fiscal 2022 APE, the bancassurance channel share was 39%, agency share was 24%, direct business share was 13%, the share of other partnerships was 9%, and the balance was contributed by group business. Moving on to the second P of protection business on slide seven. First, on retail protection. As you are aware, there has been a lot of discussion about the reinsurance price hike. In pricing the product to our customers, our approach has been to calibrate the pricing with the mortality outcomes using segmentation-based data analytics, recalibrate the underwriting standards based on emerging mortality experience across segments, review the retention limits based on our past outcomes, and preserve the overall VNB margins of the protection segment. As a result of this approach, we have been able to limit the increase in pricing at 0%-10% across various segments without compromising on the VNB margin of the protection business. Given this marginal increase in prices, we do not expect it to have any material impact on the demand. Over the medium term to long term, given the significant under-penetration, we continue to believe it to be a multi-decade opportunity, and specifically for a company like us, which has a strong customer proposition and a wide distribution network. Coming to this quarter's performance, despite the supply side constraints, we are happy to note that the decline in retail protection has been arrested sequentially when compared to the last quarter. Second, group term business. We continue to cater to the increased demand with a risk-calibrated approach. We have significantly scaled up the business, primarily driven by increase in pricing. Given the push on vaccination by large employers like us, their willingness to financially cover larger base of their employees, and the early evidence of low mortality claims from the third wave, we see this to be a great opportunity. This should also give us inroads into the retail protection business over a period of time. Third, credit life business. Similar to the group term, the pricing has already been revised for the credit life segment as well. Further, with pickup in credit demand and improved disbursement, we have seen a higher growth in this segment also. Given the performance of these three segments, our total protection APE grew by 20% to 3.06 billion rupees in the third quarter, resulting in 22% year-on-year growth for the 9 months compared to the same period last year. Also, our protection mix has actually increased to 16.7% in 9 months of this financial year as compared to 16.2% in financial year 2021. I would like to highlight that based on total new business sum assured, our market share has actually increased to 12.7% in 9 months of this fiscal from 12.5% in the whole of last financial year. With this, we continue to maintain the private market leadership in sum assured. Now, moving on to the third P of persistency presented in slide 8, we continue to see further improvements across most cohorts. While the 13-month persistency ratio has been stable at 84.8%, our 61st-month persistency ratio improved from 49.8% in March 2021 to 52.7% at December 2021. On the fourth P of productivity presented in slide 9, our total expenses grew by 25% year-on-year for the 9-month period of this financial year. The growth in expenses was lower than the new business growth, which stood at 30% for the same period. Alongside our 4P strategy framework, we continue to maintain a resilient balance sheet. On mortality risk for 9 months of this fiscal, gross claims on account of COVID-19 stood at 20.45 billion rupees and net of reinsurance, the claim amount was 9.82 billion rupees. This net claim amount includes settled as well as notified as well as in process claims. Further, at December 2021, we hold reserves of 2.03 billion rupees towards COVID-19 claims. Satyan will talk about this in more detail. Our solvency ratio was 202% as of December 2021 as compared to the required ratio, regulatorily required ratio of 150%. On credit risk, only 0.2% of our fixed income portfolio is invested in bonds rated below AA, and we continue to maintain a track record of not having a single NPA since inception. Of our total liabilities, non-par guaranteed return products comprise only about 1.6%. We continue to closely monitor our liquidity and ALM positions, and we have no issues to report. As a result of these above drivers, the VNB for 9 months of this fiscal was 13.88 billion rupees, a significant growth of 35% over 9 months of last financial year. Given our APE of 51.25 billion rupees, the resultant VNB margin was 27.1% for 9M FY 2022 as compared to 25.1% for the whole of last financial year. As we have always articulated in the past, we continue to focus on absolute VNB growth, which is our stated objective. Before I hand over to Satyan to talk us through some of the details, I would like to maintain that we continue to maintain our objective of doubling our financial year 2019 VNB by financial year 2023, which requires a compounded annual growth rate of 28% over the current and the next financial years, as we have articulated earlier. With the VNB growth of 35% for this 9 months of this fiscal year on a year-on-year basis, we believe that we are on track to achieve this aspiration. Thank you all for joining the call. I will now hand it over to Satyan. Thank you.
Thank you, Kannan. I hope I am clear. Okay. Good evening, everyone. Our primary focus continues to be to grow the absolute value of new business, that is the VNB, through the 4P strategy of premium growth, protection business growth, persistency improvement, and productivity improvement. The first element of premium growth. Our product range with propositions to suit different risk characteristics of customers has been a very important enabler of premium growth. In terms of our performance on slide 15, we have registered a strong growth year-on-year across all segments except group funds business, which tends to be lumpy in nature. Within this, our annuity business grew by 77%. Linked business grew by 35%, non-linked savings grew by 29%, and protection grew by 22%, resulting in an overall APE growth of 30% year-on-year for the 9 months ending December 2021. In terms of new business received premium for 9 months FY22, annuity business contribution stood at 20%, significantly higher than 15% in the same period last year. With a premium amount of 12.21 billion in 9 months FY2022, we were one of the largest pension and annuity providers in the market. Our wholly owned subsidiary, ICICI Prudential Pension Funds Management Company Limited, distributes products under the National Pension System and is registered as a pension fund manager and a point of presence. This business is synergistic to our annuity offerings and is expected to support growth of the annuity business in future. The AUM managed by the PFM has increased by 58% over December 2020 to 104.41 billion at December 2021. The PFM has a market share of 15.6% in the private sector AUM at December 31st, 2021. Moving on to distribution, we have continued to enhance our distribution network across channels. In the agency channel, the approach has been to ring-fence our highly productive agents. We also added about 18,000 new agents in 9 months FY2022. Within the bank assurance channel, we have a total of 23 bank partnerships. On partnership distribution, we added 72 partnerships during the 9 months and now have about 700 partnerships across traditional and non-traditional distributors such as web aggregators, payment banks, small finance banks, and insurance marketing firms. For the direct channel, the strategy has been that of upsell to our existing customers aided by analytics. Coming to the performance of these distribution channels on slide 18, we saw strong growth across distribution channels. Our bank insurance channel APE grew by 21% year-on-year to 20.22 billion in 9M FY2022. Specifically, the business share of ICICI Bank to overall APE was stable at about 28% for 9 months FY22 as it has been in the last two quarters. The annuity business from ICICI Bank grew by 78% year-on-year in 9 months FY2022. Our new bank partnerships continued to contribute to a significant share of bank assurance APE. Our agency channel APE grew by 32% year-on-year to 12.53 billion. Direct and partnership channels grew by 34% and 35% respectively in the same period over last year. The second element of protection growth on slide 20. Given the pandemic environment, supply side constraints, including revised underwriting guidelines, continue to impact the pure term retail protection business. One of our responses to these challenges has been a system integration with a document aggregator. With the customer's consent, this integration seamlessly fetches digital bank statements and income tax returns. For the month of December, when we started this, more than 1,300 applications were processed using this facility. Further, as Kannan mentioned earlier, we also launched a return of premium plan in the month of December 2021. This proposition allows us to cater to a newer customer segment. For 9 months FY2022, the overall protection APE grew by 22% to 8.56 billion. In terms of new business received premium, protection contributed 28% of the total new business premium for 9 months FY2022. With this, I would like to highlight that almost half of the new business premium for the period has been contributed by the protection and annuity segments, which are significantly underpenetrated parts of the market. The third element of persistency on slide 22. We continue to have a strong focus on improving the quality of business and customer retention, which is reflected in our persistency ratios. We have seen further improvement in persistency ratios across most cohorts during 9 months FY2022. Our 13th month persistency ratio at December 2021 was 84.8%. While this ratio is stable as compared to March 2021, it has significantly improved from 82.7% to 84.8% as compared to December 20. This makes us believe that directionally we should end the year with the 13th month persistency ratio being better than the full year last year. The fourth element of productivity on slide 25. On the cost side, the most significant increase has been in manpower cost. We continue to invest in our distribution expansion. Even with the cost increase, our cost to assets under management has been stable at 2.1% for 9 months FY2022. Also, we continued to leverage technology for process re-engineering and to drive productivity. Some of the key technology initiatives that we took during the quarter include an improved user interface and user experience in the mobile app, providing simplified purchase as well as servicing experience. We also enhanced our app to include a fitness tracker for the customer. We also empowered our partners to accept customer requests, including claim intimations on their platform. And as I had mentioned earlier, in the context of simplification of protection onboarding journey, leveraging the ecosystem to obtain digital bank statements and income tax returns for financial underwriting has been a new initiative. In terms of digital capabilities too, we have got some significant achievements. Our website is the most visited website amongst the private sector life insurance companies. Similarly, our mobile app has been rated the highest within the life insurance industry. Over 90% of service transactions, that is roughly 3 million a month, are done through self-help or digital mode. In terms of insurance applications, the digital adoption rate is at 96%. The outcome of our focus on these four P's, as you may see on slide 27, has resulted in a VNB of 13.88 billion for 9 months FY22, a growth of 35% over 9 months FY2021. Given our APE of 51.25 billion, the resultant VNB margin was 27.1% for 9M FY22 as compared to 25.1% in FY21. We continue to focus on absolute VNB growth, which is our stated objective. Now moving on to the trend in COVID-19 claims. We continued to receive COVID-19 claims in Q3 FY22, but most of these were claims pertaining to previous periods, that is, delayed intimations. COVID-19 claims pertaining to the current quarter have not been significant. As a result, our COVID-19 claims net of reinsurance stood at 9.82 billion for 9 months FY22. Every claim that has been notified at any of our touch points is accounted for in this number, even as they are being processed further. Coming to the provision held for potential COVID-19 claims, there is a declining impact of COVID-19 claims that we have seen for Q3 FY22. Also, the emerging experience from other countries is that the mortality rate for the Omicron variant is significantly lower than the other earlier variants. Third, in India, the third wave hasn't peaked yet, and we still have a section of population that is yet to be vaccinated. We therefore believe that it is prudent to continue to hold provisions for future COVID-19 claims at December 2021. We now hold provisions of 2.03 billion towards potential COVID-19 claims. These include provisions for claims that have been incurred but not reported, as well as probable claims in the future based on the emerging trend. On the financial metrics, profit after tax for 9 months FY2022 stood at 5.69 billion. Our solvency ratio was about 200 at 202.2% at the end of December 2021. Our AUM was more than 2.37 trillion rupees at 31st December 2021, a growth of 16% from December 2020. To summarize, we monitor ourselves on the 4P framework of premium growth, protection business growth, persistency improvement, and productivity improvement to improve expense ratios. Our performance on these dimensions is what we expect to feed into our VNB growth over time. Thank you, and we are now happy to take any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Arav Sangai from VT Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening, sir. Hope all good at your end. So, so my first question was pertaining to the growth that we have seen in quarter three. So, I think we have shown a little lesser growth compared to some of our private peers, even though we kind of had a base impact. And we have almost filled all the product gaps that we had with respect to, say, the non-par and everything. So, how are we seeing the things pan out for, say, the next, this quarter and specifically for the next year to, you know, to reach our goal of VNB doubling? Like, what products might drive this growth and why were we a little lower than industry for this particular quarter? Any reason and something of that sort?
Yeah, Arav, we are doing good. Thank you for joining the call and ask the questions. I will ask, you know, my colleague Amit, who is the CDO, to supplement my answer. Yes, if you look at the quarterly growth rate, we had the overall growth of about 15% on a year-on-year basis. So that is probably what you are referring to. So, you know, the way we look at it is that rather than looking at a quarter-to-quarter number on the specific KPI or anything, we would rather be focused on the full year VNB, which I talked about. The fact that we have already grown the VNB at 35%, there should not be any concern at all whatsoever in terms of our VNB development for the rest of this period as well as for the next financial year. So that is the way we would plan it. Now coming to specifically the channel side, Satyan already talked about ICICI Bank having been stable between 27% and 28% during the last few quarters. So that is the way we would expect ICICI Bank to continue. All the other areas have actually grown at a much higher rate. And, you know, depending on the channel you look at, they have grown between 20% to 30%. So we do have the momentum going for us. And given the strategy changes in ICICI Bank, that has been broadly stable at 27-28. So that's the way we will look at the top line. But if you look at the product side, some of the steps we have taken, be it, you know, the protection product or some of the long-term gift, which is our non-linked plant saving solutions, they have really been kicked in by during the end of December. So full benefit of those initiatives we have taken on the product side will play out in the last quarter. So we do have enough product levers available and we do have the channel momentum going with us. And finally, I would also like to say that the bank partnerships which you have tied up, they are growing at a much faster rate compared to the company average. And you know how some of these banks close the fourth quarter. So we do believe that that also will give us a leg up in terms of the growth. And the last point I want to talk about, though we have talked about it in our opening remarks, is that on the retail protection also, things, you know, while it has been a year-on-year decline, we have got our act together in terms of our pricing strategy, which has led to only 0 to 10% increase in pricing, as we said. And with that out of the way, with the group term as well as credit life momentum going with us, retail should come to our benefit. In fact, if I look at the quarterly margins and the nine-month margins, even with a little bit of slowness in the retail, we've been able to maintain and grow the margins compared to last year. Not just because of the other lines of business in protection other than retail, but also because we've been carefully able to calibrate all our non-linked savings products by elongating the tenure as well as by increasing the annuity. So just to summarize, we have enough levers available on the product side as well as on the distribution side to have a good closure to this fourth quarter and ensure that we are on track regarding the VNB, absolute VNB growth objective. With this, I would like to hand it over to Amit to see if he wants to add anything, any color on the distribution side. Amit, over to you.
Yeah, Kannan, I just want to extend the point that you made on a healthy growth that we have been able to witness outside ICICI channel. I just want to reiterate here. In terms of numbers, if you were to look at excluding ICICI, our growth actually has been in excess of 40%. As you know, that industry has grown at around 19.5% and private insurers have grown close to 30%. So to that extent, excluding ICICI, our growth has been quite commendable and in excess of 40%. So in terms of ICICI recalibration of strategy, we have stated in the previous quarters as well that they are very focused on driving VNB-led products for us, which is principally driven by annuity and protection range of products. So they continue to do well on annuity, and their growth of almost 78% over last year is testimony to their commitment to annuity range of business. But as you know that in a weighted business, annuity doesn't contribute to the top line. Same way, while protection still remains one of the principal driver of ICICI, but the ecosystem challenges which were faced by the entire industry probably had an impact on ICICI as well, which I'm sure as things pan out with introduction of new products, ICICI will once again become a primary contributor to our entire journey on protection side of business as well. So these are the things that I wanted to just talk to you about channels perspective. On the products, you know that what we today have our linked business almost being contributing close to 50% of our overall portfolio. And at times, you know, you will get upside of a good market sentiment and there will be volatility in between times. Good part is that in comparison to how we used to run unit-linked business in the past, now we have fairly diversified fund strategy also to support our unit growth, which was further supported by some of the new funds that we launched in quarter three. So at times, some months, you may see a good tailwind supporting unit-linked business, which is still a significant part of our overall portfolio. In a couple of months, because of volatility, you may see some migration may happen from unit-linked to non-linked savings business. But good part is that irrespective of the market volatility, you may see some migration here and there, but our comprehensiveness of our product suite should take care of growth aspects, specifically in channels which is outside ICICI. These are the two points on product and channel front that I just wanted to support.
Right. So thanks for a detailed answer, sir. So my second question is around retail protection. So I think the industry has gone through a lot of consolidation in the past year, and with all the price hikes and everything done, how are you thinking about retail protection, like with surety that this quarter we might see a pickup or say for in the next quarter we might see a pickup? And especially the second part I have in this question is regards to the ROP product that we have launched. So ROP is a very, it's a very famous product and people have demand for that product. And there's one peers of ours which is very active in this segment. So how are we looking to compete in this segment? And what proportion of our overall protection do you think ROP can become given it is a favorable product amidst the audience? And whether that would affect our margins at the company level, but since the ticket size is also higher, so VNB overall might remain same, but the margins might dilute. So any color on the ROP and the retail protection demand going ahead?
Yeah, Arav, thanks for asking those questions. Kannan again. I will give my sense on retail protection. Where do you see it going from here? And then I will request Amit, talk about some of the specific features of our ROP product, which we believe is quite a differentiated proposition in the market. I will also request Satyan to address your concern on what kind of margin impact which could be there and how we are planning about it. The first part on the retail protection, as you know, we have seen a year-on-year decline in retail protection, which I talked about. The good news is that between Q2 and Q3, we are broadly stable in terms of the retail protection. So that's the first point I want to talk about. The second point is that if I look at Q3, within that, while we give only the disclosures at the end of the year on what is the constituent retail protection, I can tell you that between October to November to December, we have seen a sequential growth in terms of the retail protection growing. Again, as I said, we are looking at our VNB and the VNB margin with a lot of positive attitude, because even with this kind of retail protection, we've been able to maintain the margins and grow our VNB. So since this stabilization has happened, we do believe that on a quarterly basis, at least we can improve the retail protection from here on, because the increase in price has been marginal, and so we do not expect any material impact on demand when it comes to the price elasticity perspective. So we don't see any problem. And of course, the medium to longer term, we see the demand growing every day. Absolutely, there's no dearth of demand. So that way, I would say that under-penetration opportunity, medium to long-term opportunity is quite intact. So what we have done, given all this, is that trying to take the momentum forward by keeping the price rises to a minimum, cutting out completely undesirable profiles, focusing on profile, desirable profile, is how we have really calibrated this business. So we are quite confident of retail protection growing. The only pinch of salt, if at all, I would like to add, is about the third wave we talked about. We are seeing prevalence of the disease amongst the employees as well as the distributors, and also I'm sure from the customer's perspective also the fulfillment, etc. So that we'll have to sort of a little bit calibrate, I feel. But I do see that more of a January issue, here and now issue, rather than even the February issue, given the severity of the disease and all the statements and the data which we are seeing. We'll probably be, we'll have to watch that physical fulfillment issues on retail protection only for probably January. So that is how we are planning the year, and that is how we believe that things will pan out from here. Now, I would request Amit to talk about ROP product. Early days in terms of giving you volumes, too early, but I will ask him to give a sense of product features and how he expects to take. Margin issue, we have done a full analysis of margin issue because after introduction of ROP. That part I would request Satyan to elaborate. Thank you, Arup.
Yeah, thanks, Kannan. So while we have done our recalibration of pricing post the changes that happened subsequent to reinsurer price hike, to ring fence our best and most desired profiles in the affluent customer segment. And that is something that Satyan will elaborate further. But specifically, how we have now gone about adding to the overall target segments is by introducing this return of premium product, which is appropriate for mass and mass affluent customer segment. And the insight that we were working on were twofold. One was that customer who wanted something in return and was not willing to invest on an expense towards covering his life and wanted something in return, which was the most obvious insight that everybody was working on, and there were products which were available in the market addressing that insight. So we have introduced a level cover product which returns premium to the customer at the end of policy term. What we have done as an extension is given an option to the customer to convert his return of premium lump sum into an income form. So smartly, product can be positioned as something which covers your life till you need cover and converts into an income once you need annuity. Similarly, there is another variant which is most appropriate for young urban, where the need for protection may not be very high when he starts, say, at an age of 25 to 30. But his cover increases with his increase in liability, increase in loans that he undertakes over a period of time. So the variant within this return of premium, also for specifically urban and young customers, it allows him to have a variable cover, which increases and decreases right through the life stage, and also give option to the customer to take his entire return of premium much earlier than the completion of policy term, which means that you actually get in hand your entire premium back then you are active and when you are healthy. So you can enjoy that return of premium and the lump sum payout, and while your cover continues right till the policy term. So I think there's quite a few things that we have tried to do it differently in the return of premium variant, and I guess we will be able to go beyond what is most obvious segment which has been addressed through return of premium products available in the industry today. Thanks. Over to you, Satyan.
Thanks, Amin. So from a margin point of view, Arav, you summarized it very well yourself when you said that actually in absolute VNB terms, it should not adversely impact, and that's how we look at it. What we had also said is that we would disclose the volume of business that we do in the ROP category separately. It was trivial in the last quarter, but it was still disclosed in the slide. Going forward as well, we will disclose it. The most important way, the way I would summarize what Kannan and Amit also spoke about is that in the short term, given that we are not a one-trick pony anymore, but have multiple levers of growth and VNB expansion, one segment does not hurt us so much. Second, the longer-term prospects of retail protection indeed are our belief that over a period of time, it will grow to become a much larger opportunity than what it is even today. Third, the new product offerings, the way Amit described it and the way I would add to it is, by the way, it also offers a return of premium. It's the richness of the features beyond return of premium which is important. And four, from a VNB absolute point of view, given that it is an incremental market opportunity, we would like to believe that this is an incremental VNB opportunity and not a substitution from the retail protection. So one doesn't really have to worry about margins in that context.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Suresh Ganpati from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi. I know Kannan, I have two questions. One is, you know, you have just shown a 0 to 10% hike. Is it that, I mean, that's what you're expecting on the protection side. Is it that there is a greater amount of retention on your book compared to what it is? If you can share some numbers, because we just wanted to know whether you are actually willing to take a higher risk so that the protection price hikes are limited. So that's the first question.
So Suresh, yes, we have increased retention. The earlier retention in the protection was 2 million. We have taken it up to 10 million. The reason we have done it is that we believe that with the underwriting practices that we have put in place, with the risk selection procedures that we have put in place, and with the new price that we are offering, this will indeed be a profitable business which we can choose to retain with ourselves. And therefore, the main purpose of reinsurance now is less about risk management, more about capital management. And whatever we do on retentions will be for the purpose of capital management and not for the purpose of risk management. So yes, we have increased it after having been convinced ourselves that the proposition and the process that we are delivering is indeed continues to be as profitable as it was before.
Okay, so earlier anything above 2 million was reinsured. Now everything above 10 million is reinsured, right?
That is correct.
So in terms of percentage, what would be? So if I were to really look at retail protection, would it be earlier 50% reinsured, now it would be 70% reinsured in terms of the overall protection premiums, or how should I look at that number?
So earlier it used to be almost 60 to 70% reinsured. Now it will come down to less than 50% being reinsured.
Okay, but Satyan, I'm not convinced on the risk aspect. The fact that the reinsurers were, I mean, suppose if there is going to be another big COVID wave, you are taking undue amount of risk on your book. How can you say that this is only a capital management issue?
So Suresh, the whole point of the risk here is not just COVID. The fundamental part of risk here is about price commensurate with who we are selling it to. And that is where the underwriting norms and the target market come into play. If you heard what Amit described some time back, the way we have now repositioned our entire product suite is that the term life, which is the earlier product without return of premium, will be positioned more as a better demographic profile oriented product. The mass and mass affluent customer base to whom we were earlier selling some part of the term life, we will now seek to migrate them to the term with return of premium, which has far more relaxed or liberal or higher expected mortality outcome pricing to it. So we are now looking at operating in this spectrum of customers with a series of products, each of which from a mortality outcome point of view, we consider a suitable fit to the segment that we are offering. Particularly with respect to your question on COVID, will a higher retention increase exposure to single events? It may very well increase exposure to single events, but we believe that in the longer term, the higher retention is commensurate with the outcome that we are expecting in the product. And in the shorter term, whether it is a single event or otherwise, we would much rather manage it from a risk management point of view through capital provision or catastrophe reinsurance to deal with non-pandemic related single events.
Satyan, sorry, I'm going to harp on this a bit more because this is just important for everybody in the call. I mean, the challenge here is this is not going to stop here, right? So the reinsurance hikes may further happen. Is the competition really tying your hands for you to really force yourself to take a decision, because nothing like this was hinted in the previous call? Suddenly you have decided to take a higher risk on your book. So is the competition tying your hands, therefore you have gone ahead and taken this decision? And if there are subsequent further reinsurance hikes, what is going to be your strategy? Are you going to keep retaining more? Because some point in time, the price hikes have to be 25-30% if you can't retain so much on your books.
Yeah, first I Suresh. Competition, Suresh, and then I will hand it over to Satyan to talk about the future reinsurance approach, etc. On the competition, first I want to tell you that competition is not making us to do this at all. Because if you look at, even today, if I keep out the return on premium, if you look at the pure term life, we are the market leader among the private players. In the entire industry, we are the market leaders on the pure retail. The issue of the frictions on the ground in terms of medical examinations, underwriting standards, etc., has impacted everybody, all of us together. And even within that, we have been able to maintain our market leadership, absolutely no problem on that. So we will not be guided by what competitors are doing in terms of our pricing strategy, because last time around also, when we thought that we should be increasing the price higher than others, we did it. We didn't even think about it a couple of times. So that is our approach. So I want to assure you that it is not driven by competition at all. It is totally driven by our own data analytics on what has been our experience on that book of 1 crore and above, and how we should be looking at it. So with all the, you know, decision of the risk committee of the board and the board, we have taken this call. So I just want to assure you that it has nothing to do with the competition, because if that is the case, then even before we introduced all that, we would not be showing a 27% margin and a growth of VNB of 35% for this 9 months, which is actually higher than our targeted VNB growth. So that I want to assure you. I will like to hand it over to Satyan to talk about our overall reinsurance approach. Satyan.
Suresh, one of the things again that I have been harping on across the past almost now 8 quarters is it matters less what reinsurance price is. It matters more whether the mortality outcome is in line with pricing or not. And I've said this repeatedly every time at the results call. That view exactly remains the same. And therefore, from a reinsurance price point of view, to the extent that I am reinsured, if there is a price change, of course, I will have to reflect it in the price to the customer. But the most important part of this is to deliver an underlying mortality experience, which is consistent with what we price for. And with a higher retention, we are basically standing up and saying that I have even more faith that my price will work for the underwriting norms that I have put in place.
Okay. So Satyan, with long COVID and all these kind of issues, how can one be so confident about mortality experience, right? Are you appropriately pricing long COVID into your products and stuff? So just for us to get a bit more clarity.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with your concern, Suresh, but you know, I cannot be having a different underwriting standard for retaining in my book and different underwriting standard if I have to reinsure. It will come and bite me and I will run out of capacity, or they will increase the price so much in the next cycle to recover all the losses. So that has not been our approach at all. I mean, whether I do the risk management or reinsurer does the risk management, my underwriting standards have to be the same. I cannot say that, you know, this somebody is going to backstop me because of that I can relax my underwriting standard. That will come back and bite us. That's not the way the industry itself operates, and definitely we don't operate that way. So it is just that based on a 1 crore portfolio in the past, how the mortality has moved, and we are getting the confidence that whether they do it or we do it doesn't matter. I would rather retain the profit in that segment. And then we will do reinsurance as a capital management. And finally, the catastrophic cover also exists. That is not going to really create a larger problem for the company. So that, you know, I would request you to look at it from that perspective rather than saying that I will relax my standard if there is a reinsurance and then if I will, you know, that is not the way we can really build a portfolio. Satyan, you want to supplement anything?
One last point, Kanan. I mean, all said and done, we have been talking about percentage price hike, Suresh, but again, you have seen the comparison of prices. We're still not the cheapest in the market. So the pricing strategy still is not to be the cheapest product.
Okay. I think I'm fine with this. Thank you so much, Kanan and Satyan.
Yeah. Thanks, Suresh.
Just one thing. If I could add also, Satyan, you may like to clarify that we have segmented through deep analytics our entire target market for our old pure term cover, and not only we are prioritizing some of our desired profiles, there are also some profiles that we have alienated in our strategy going forward. So which has improved our capacity to not only have the best pricing to our best customers and also at the same time reduce risk because of eliminating some of the profiles in geography where we had the adverse profiles. So that's another something which helped us create capacity to keep our pricing hike limited. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Swarna Mukherjee from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Sir, a couple of questions. First, again on the retail protection side, I wanted to understand that now that you are pressing on this multiple levers of price hike and changing the underwriting thing, so does that imply that if over time your supply side considerations would then come down? And your growth will be more volume driven as opposed to just the price driven growth that we expect to see because of the hike. And addition to that is in terms of again the ROP product. So I got a little bit confused in terms of the strategy because if you are planning to sell it to the mass and mass affluent customer segment where you also sell the individual pure product, then how would you be, you know, seeing this as an incremental GMV opportunity? So if you could throw some color on that. And then which channels would address that? So would this be again sold by ICICI Bank largely or across channels? So this is my first question.
So maybe I'll first talk about the supply side constraints. So fundamentally, what we are seeing is supply side constraints, Swarna, are driven by some of the pandemic-related situations. So as long as the pandemic is live, some of them may very well continue to be there. Only once the pandemic subsides and the environment improves, will some of these become tailwinds, if you will, from a growth point of view. And therefore, in this context, what is more important is not to go after unbridled growth in volume, but to ensure that what we write is written on terms that we are comfortable with for the 30 or 40 years that we'll be retaining the risk on our books. Going forward beyond the pandemic period, of course, we would expect the volume-driven growth to be the big driver. That is also our entire thesis with respect to the opportunity, where at the current point of time, our estimation is just about 10% of the addressable population for term life actually has term life cover. So yes, indeed, over a medium to long term, it will be a volume-driven business. But in the short term, there are multiple levers that we will have to operate on to ensure that we write the business in a sensible fashion. To your question on, is there a confusion on the positioning of the product? We would like to think not, because fundamentally, if I were to look at myself or yourself as a consumer, typically the more affluent people will not see value in a return of premium proposition. They would much rather go for a product which may not return premium but provides a higher cover, which is what they are looking at. But typically the more mass and mass affluent customers are the people who express a view to say that, look, I don't have money to spend on insurance. At least what I can do is to convert part of that into savings but still get sizable insurance cover. And that is the customer need which is driving into the return of premium variant. But more importantly, like Amit described earlier in the conversation, this is not just a return of premium product. It is actually a product with a host of innovative features, which also has a return of premium feature. So to that extent, given the customer segment who typically prefer a pure term and who typically prefer a return of premium, you can see it in the industry data already is one up today. The average sum assured of people writing pure term is 70 to 80 lakhs. The average sum assured of people that are selling term with return of premium is probably closer to 25 lakhs. So it's a very different customer segment which clearly is being established even by the current people who are selling the product. And that's the reason why we believe it will be an incremental opportunity.
Okay. Okay, that's very helpful, sir. So my second question is on the reserve side for basically the COVID-19 claims. So you at the end of this quarter had 2.03 billion in terms of provisions, while at the end of last quarter it was at 4.12 billion. So would you kindly tell us how the flow has been in this? Because I just wanted to know if there has been a reserve release, because I can see that the incremental claim has been 1.2 billion net of reinsurance between Q2 and Q3. So if you could explain the flow in the provision.
Yes, there has been a release of reserve. So I will talk through the numbers. And when we spoke of the numbers last quarter, the way we typically tag claims as potentially COVID is based on what submission the customer has made. Eventually, when we assess the claim, then we do the final classification of what is COVID and not COVID. So in a way, there's a bit of redoing of the past numbers as well. So I'll talk through some of the numbers. During this quarter, of the intimations that came to us in the quarter, claims on account of COVID net of reinsurance was 0.7 billion. Out of this 0.7 billion, a bulk of it, which is 0.65 billion, pertained to deaths which had happened prior to October 1, which means Q1 and Q2. Like you mentioned, at the end of the last quarter, we had an IBNR provision of 1.13 billion, out of which we ended up utilizing roughly 0.65. So to that extent, our provision at the end of the last quarter was still more than sufficient to cover what intimations we got with delays during the last quarter. We closed the year with an IBNR provision of 0.24 billion. So net-net, there was some release net of claims that we saw during the quarter. On the claims, on the provision for future COVID claims, we had a provision of almost 3 billion at the end of last quarter. During the quarter, we only got about 0.05 billion worth of claims in that context. As against a claims intimated of 0.05, which were not accounted in the last quarter end, against that, we continue to hold a provision of almost 1.8 billion. So net-net, when I put all of this together, I indeed have a provision release net of claims that I booked in the quarter of roughly 2 billion rupees. In the financial statements, I do have a net provision release of about 2 billion. But when I look at the balance sheet provision, a further 1.8 billion of COVID plus 0.24 billion of IBNR, which is the 2 billion plus that we spoke about, is still in the context of only 0.05 billion of intimated claims that we had in the last quarter. So we still think that that is a fairly prudent level of provision to carry as we go into the last quarter.
Right, sir. That's very clear. Thank you. And if I may squeeze in one further question, sir, on the non-linked savings side. This quarter has been slightly slower on this side. Now that a new product has come with very competitive IRR, your thoughts on how do you see it panning out and which channels you want to utilize, considering that your larger partner is not selling traditional products?
Amit, you want to talk about the new product with the new IRR?
Yeah, so thanks, Kamal. So we have introduced this guaranteed product in the long-term income space. As you know, that guaranteed space is segmented into three type of customer benefits. One is lump sum, where a customer pays for a specific period and then gets a lump sum after the policy term. Then there are short-term incomes, which is 5 year, 7 year, 10 year kind of a time frame for which over which customer gets guaranteed income. And then there was a large market which was catering to long-term guaranteed income requirement of the customer. That is the space where we have introduced this new product with few additional features, and that is something which is a very recent phenomena. You are right that that our larger partner, our bank insurance partner, is not selling traditional products. Nevertheless, we believe in customer proposition, and going by what we saw as early demand from some of our other distribution channels, we found it worthwhile to complete our offering. If you recollect, we launched our guaranteed products over a period of last 15 months in a graded manner, and we built ability over a period of last 12 to 15 months to keep adding to our guaranteed product proposition. So we want to watch it closely. It has been taken up well. This is a space and demand which is already existing. It will be competitive pricing at some point in time. It goes through a recalibration almost every month. There are committees in various insurance companies who take stock on pricing. It is, as you know, it is also linked to overall policy rates and government yields as well. So it is a dynamic world. And at times you may look competitive, at times you may not, but this is something that we'll take it, which is part of this product design that you will go and see it closely. But we are happy with almost 70%, like what Karan mentioned, almost 72% of our business is now outside ICICI. So no longer one can say that a large part of our distribution is not contributing. So we still have 72% of our distribution, which is non-ICICI. And we are very happy to take care of a product design which exclusively suits this remaining part of our non-ICICI distribution.
Yeah, if your question was specifically about here and now, January and Q4, I would expect it to be taken up by the corporate agents, broker shops, and non-ICICI multi-partner banks. So that is where I would see some momentum coming through during this quarter.
Okay.
Yeah. So just one thing just I want to add, contrary to belief that a mass and mass affluent customers tend to prefer guaranteed range of products, but actually, you know, in case of a market volatility, we have seen quite a few of affluent customers looking at guaranteed product as part of their asset diversification strategy. So even when the markets were doing well, we did not see customers going away from their asset diversification in which they were making a choice on guaranteed range of products. And that is a trend which we are continuing to see. Markets have gone up and down a couple of times in last quarter as well. But the demand for guaranteed space suggests that it is going to stay. And it was not temporarily only linked to a market volatility. I guess it is a good diversification tool even for affluent customers. So we expect this trend to continue in January and March as well.
Sure, sir. That's very helpful. I have a few more questions. I will join back in the queue. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Adarsh Parasrampuria from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, so question, going back to reinsurance, if the threshold moves from 2 million to 10 million, the reinsurance levels could drop a lot more than that. Less than 50, right? It could be a much more significant drop if you could just, because I believe your average retail term insurance protection tickets were like 7-8 million. So, you know, correct me if it's wrong, your retentions could fall quite a lot more than closer to being 50.
It could, Adarsh, but what I'm looking at is with the change in our approach to underwriting and price, we have to see what proportion of our business comes above 1 crore. With a new product launch, which is tuned more at the mass affluent, which is expected to take us some of the smaller sum assured that we were selling in the retail protection, we have to see how much of it moves into that segment. That product carries a retention of 4 million. The pure term has a retention of 10 million. The term with return of premium has a retention of 4 million. So the reason I'm putting it somewhere in between is that there are too many moving parts right now. We have to see where the mix gravitates before we are able to definitively conclude. But you are right. It could even end up being more being retained with us.
Sorry to interrupt. May I request Mr. Adarsh to please rejoin the queue? We have participants waiting for the turn.
Yeah, I'll just complete this question. So, Satin, just continuing on the same question is you know, the way to look at it is this should be an industry level phenomena, correct? And you know, it's broadly not a choice you have, right? It's what reinsurers really would have wanted, more skin in the game. You know, broadly, is that the way to look, or approaches are going to be dramatically different across insurance players here?
Oh, they can be quite different, Adarsh. What you said is correct. It is indeed the expectation of reinsurers that insurers should retain more. But I don't think any reinsurer is asking for retention to go up from 2 million to 10 million. And therefore, that is a choice that individual companies, depending on the strength of their balance sheet, depending on their capital position, and depending on their own comfort on the price and underwriting, will have to make a decision individually. So you could end up with a range of practices across the industry after the change of reinsurance rates.
And this means, right, when you take the threshold so high, as you make a choice, you're almost saying that I'm quite comfortable with my pricing now, so there should not be need for more protection rate hikes for the category that you want to underwrite over the next 2-3 years. Because that if it requires a hike, then it means that you would lose money somewhere, right? So.
Absolutely. You're right. That is a fair inference to make.
It does require high conviction, which we have, Adarsh.
Yeah, sorry, I'll go back with you, but I think the only important element here is that when you cut across the categories, while I agree with the long term, it's about you know, how much tightening that the systems had on underwriting so that the volume recovers, and when it recovers, that's the only thing.
I think that's a fair point to make, Adarsh, which is why like I said before, the approach is no longer restricted to one product with one underwriting. The approach is now spread across two products with differential underwriting norms depending on the segment of customers that we are offering it to ensure that at the end of the day, each of these segments delivers an outcome of mortality which is consistent with the price that we are charging for them. Therefore, to that extent, the extension of the offering through the new product that we have made, which, like I said, has higher expected mortality assumptions, actually widens the market for us.
Sorry to interrupt. May I request Mr. Adarsh to please rejoin the queue, sir?
Yeah, I'm done. Sorry about putting
any
questions.
No problem.
Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants, request you to please limit your question to one per participant. If you have a follow-up question, you may rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Sanket Godha from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. Satin, we at peak levels, we did almost retail protection business of 780 odd crores in FY20. If the numbers go back to those levels and we largely retain the sum assureds on that kind of a business on our books, assuming that numbers come back and we retain large part, then likely impact on the solvency, which is around 202% right now. Just wondering, given the strain it has and new business strain it has and then also the capital consumption goes up, what likely impact would be there on solvency because of that quantum of business if we do in, say, 2023 rather, I would say.
We'll watch it as it comes, Sanketh. The point that you make is indeed correct. Higher retention will mean a higher capital consumption. Our own expectation at this point of time is when we are projecting into FY 2023, we still see ourselves as being comfortably capitalized. Beyond FY 2023, what is the utilization of capital we will have to monitor. But the point really being that if a strategy of retention helps us retain more profits within the company at a risk that the balance sheet is able to take, then that is something which is worth deploying capital for.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepika Mundra from JPMorgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for taking my question. Is it just on the distribution mix? Can you tell us what was the non-ICICI Bank partner mix during the quarter? And also, the willingness of ICICI Bank to sell ROP products along with your term and annuity?
Yeah, on the first question, we've already said that ICICI Bank has been doing between 27 and 28. So that has been the number for ICICI Bank. The overall bank assurance is between 39 and 40, actually. So you can conclude that the non-ICICI Bank would be about 12% of the mix. So that is broadly the numbers for the non-bank, which has started becoming very significant. Non-ICICI Bank number for other banks has also started becoming significant now. On the second issue of ICICI Bank selling ROP, definitely yes. I would request Amit to just supplement if anything else you want to say about ICICI Bank taking up ROP. Amit, go ahead.
Yeah, so absolutely, Kannan. ICICI Bank, in its stated strategy, will continue to look at variants across protection category of products to take care of the requirements across their customer segments, which is both value banking, which they call it as mass and mass affluent customers, privileged banking customers, as well as wealth customers. It is very much in line to be launched with ICICI Bank as well.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Avinash Singh from Emkay Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good evening. Quick question or two. One, if you can provide some color on for the nine-month retail protection policy count or trend growth and the ticket size change. And on your retention again, so have you changed your retention policy on GTI and credit life? And in the backdrop of GTI seeing a meaningful price increase in the last two quarters, and so far, I mean, COVID, I mean, being benign in the last two quarters, do you see your GTI profitability for this year could, I mean, surprise positively? Thanks.
So from a GTI point of view, yes, we will see how the experience emerges. We have built in certain elements of pricing for expected COVID. To the extent that actual claims are different from that, we will keep recalibrating our pricing because you don't want to be in a situation where you are not adding value to a customer. So that is something that we will track. So if indeed claims are lower, then it may be a positive surprise at the end of the year with respect to profitability of that portfolio. In answer to your question on retention strategy, right now our retention strategy increase is for retail protection. It is possible at some point of time in the future that we consider extending it to the other segments of protection as well. But for now, it is only on the retail protection. In answer to your question on the number of policies on retail protection, that's not something that we have disclosed publicly separately, Avinash. We'll have to wait till the end of the year when we give the full breakup of all of these segments to give that color.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, everyone. So my question is just that I understood correctly. So going forward, our focus will be more on the ROP product in term life. So what kind of mix should one expect for, let's say, FY22 and 23, the split between ROP kind of product and term life, I mean, and pure term product? Secondly, in pure term product, how are we going to protect our margins? Well, that their retention could be higher because of higher sum assured. And that might mean that the reinsurance price hikes will be flowing through more in that product.
So, Abhishek, ROP, I don't think we said that we are shifting our strategy to ROP. All I'm saying is we have added another product, another proposition, another offering to our arsenal, which helps us to expand the target market. Now, quite honestly, where the mix will settle down is uncertain because there are a number of new segments that we are trying to create with the product that we have launched. So we will wait to see at least one full quarter, which is this quarter, to understand where the mix of that is settling down. With respect to the question on the reinsurance price hike, if I'm retaining more, effectively the reinsurance price hike has a lesser pass-through effect to customers. And therefore, to that extent, by retaining more, I'm actually saying that I'm less exposed from an end customer price point of view and an end profitability point of view to future changes in reinsurance price hike.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Madhukar Ladha from Elara Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Most of my questions have been answered. I just wanted to get a clarification on the COVID hit number for this quarter. So I believe you said that there's a reserve release of about 2 billion. But if we look at the net claims post reinsurance, they are at about 9.8 billion. And if I were to add that number for the first two quarters, that would be at about 8.6 billion. So there's about an additional 1.2 billion charge for this quarter. Have I missed anything or?
No, you haven't missed anything. Like I said earlier on, Madhukar, when we talk about claim amount on account of COVID, initially we do it based on the information submitted by the customer as part of a claim. Subsequently, when we complete the assessment of the claim, then we may very well find that something which was represented as a COVID claim may not be, or which was not represented as a COVID claim may actually be. Therefore, to that extent, for the past period, there is a bit of reclassification which happened. So overall, if I were to see YTD minus YTD, you're right, the number looks more like 1.1 billion. But for the quarter, purely of claims that got intimated to us, only 0.7 billion was recorded as claims on account of COVID. So the reason I use that number is to illustrate very clearly that the pattern of claims on account of COVID has come down very sharply in Q3 compared to the prior period. So yes, there is a little bit of reclassification back to the earlier period as we have completed the claims assessment.
Understood. Got it.
Both this, your number you would be driving, deriving around 1.2 as against 0.7, right?
Right, yeah.
So both are right in their own way if you just map back the date of death, which the information for which was obtained subsequently.
Understood, sir. Thank you and all the best, sir.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manish Shukla from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening and thank you for the opportunity. Satyan, just a clarification, going back to reinsurance, you said that at INR 2 million, that covered 60 to 70% of your portfolio. Given your customer positioning and ticket size, I would have expected that number to be significantly higher, the proportion.
No, no. If we were reinsuring 60 to 70%, Manish.
No, so anything more than INR 2 million was automatically reinsured or it was discretionary?
It was automatically. No, no, it was automatically reinsured.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying, right? So your ticket size and customer segment in which you've been operating till date before ROP, I would have expected a much larger proportion of your policies to qualify at INR 2 million plus.
No, we had an average sum assured of about 7 million or so, between 6 and 7 million. So given the 7 million average with a retention of 2 million, give or take, it is a one-third retention in that sense. So between 30 to 40% is what I was retaining. The rest was reinsured. I'm using broadly rough numbers.
Okay, understood. Yeah, fair point. Fine, got it. And where, the change of threshold was effective what date in terms of retention? 2 to 5, 10 million?
December, last week of December.
Last week of December. All right. Okay. Thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Harshit Toshniwal from Premji Invest. Please go ahead.
Hi, Satyan. Thanks for the opportunity. So the question is with respect to our targets of doubling the VNB by 23. So, I mean, if I just look at the ask rate standing today, then even if we kind of maintain a stable margins, we would be looking for a 15 to 20%, around 20% top line growth in 23. Now, just want to understand that, again, when we look at the recent month numbers in November, December, our YOY growth rates have started moderating to a 10%, 15% levels. But just want to understand the confidence levels for achieving a 15, 20% growth on a last year's base, on basically on FY22 base. How do you look at that target? I agree that we clearly have an aspirational target on VNB, but I think VNB margins is something which we would expect to be stable over there, but clocking a 90 billion kind of a APE in FY23, how do you achieve that 90 or rather 100 billion AP? How should we look at that number?
Sure. So maybe I'll start off and then hand over to Amit to explain. I think fundamentally what we are looking at is multiple channels contributing to the growth. If you see all of the channels that we have been building out during this year, whether it is agency, whether it is new bank partnerships, whether it is non-bank partnerships, all of them, and like Amit mentioned this in answer to an earlier question, collectively have been growing in excess of 40% this year. And particularly even in the third quarter, they have been growing closer to the 20% number that you spoke about. So 15 to 20% in the context of the build out that we are putting on these channels to us seems reasonable. Amit, do you want to add?
Yeah, just on two elements I wanted to just add, Satyan, to what you're talking. See, first of all, this year has been, for large part of this year, almost 9 months, has been quite muted on protection line of business, introduction of new products. And what we have now opened a new segment through ROP. One, we'll of course have a play for entire 12-month period next year. That is one. Couple of more interventions that we did even on non-linked savings business, which was addressing almost 40-45% of the overall guaranteed space, which we have now opened for us, which was applicable only for 3-4 months in this year, will actually be available to us for entire 12-month periods. That's the second one. Third is, by organic nature of some of our distribution channels, like for instance, partnership distribution, we add 50 to 100 partners every year. And that is what we have seen both through organic, which is efficiency-led growth, and also through inorganic addition of partners. We have been consistently growing in excess of 30% in that entire distribution space of partnership distribution. That is something which gives us confidence. And other than banks, if you ask me, we still believe that at the current penetration levels which exist in our existing banker partners and with completeness of the product profile that we have added over a period of time, I guess this is only the first full 12-month period that we have experienced with our new partners. And they will, of course, organically we expect them to grow further from where they are currently. We have seen some of our partners actually experiencing growth in excess of 40%, where the entire growth has been contributed only because of partnership with us. So their existing incumbent partner has been able to stay at a similar level or a single digit growth, but their large part of growth has been contributed by us. And they are all fee hungry distribution channels. And we do believe that their fee aspirations will only grow from their current levels. And we will be the beneficiaries in terms of growing through our partnerships further in next financial year over what we have delivered this year.
Got it, got it. The reason I just asked is to ensure that in going forward, it's going to be the AP growth, which will be the key driver for us to track in terms of the achievement of that 2x VNB.
Again, like I said, it will be a mix of both, like I just mentioned, because protection, the annuity range of products, as well as what I mentioned about non-linked savings guaranteed product, these were the introductions towards the latter part of the year this year, which will be available for an entire 12-month period, which may contribute towards margin expansion as well. So it will be a combination. How it pans out starting next year, we'll see. But of course, large part of it will be AP-driven, but margin expansion is also not ruled out.
Got it.
Yeah, sorry, Satyan.
Yeah. Oh, no, same thing,
Amit.
Thanks, Amit. Thanks, Satyan. All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nidesh Jain from Investec. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. So firstly, on the long-term guaranteed products, we have been staying away from those products in the past. So what makes us confident to launch these products in this quarter from a hedging perspective?
Yeah, there's two aspects, Nidesh. We said that two aspects of this business can make it bad. One is that assuming a large level of lapsation and assuming that guarantee will be paid for by the lapsation. So that approach continues. So to that extent, we are not factoring in lapsation and all that. We are just mindful of the lapsation being higher, still having to deliver. So that one boundary is something which we are taking the actual persistency experience in our past non-linked savings products. The second is clearly that we have talked about the market instruments and derivatives being available. That to the extent it can be manufactured well, we will be able to execute this product. That has been our approach for that. So we are getting more instruments are available, more counterparties are coming today. We never believed in internal hedging and all that, so we never wanted to do that. That was the second point of objection to launching this product in a big way. So here also, if you look at it, premium payment term is up to 10 years only. And each tranche of new business will be designing a hedging program. And the market seems to be quite liquid today. And we have locked in the yield for the future premium. And of course, we looked at the underlying bonds for derivatives selected, keeping in mind the liability tenure. So those instruments are available today. So, and we do believe that this is something which can be executed without taking too much risk. That's why we are getting more confident today than in the past, launching and selling these products. Of course, we will review pricing based on the interest rate environment. That may not be applicable for the tranches already sold, but the future we will keep calibrating it to make sure that we are quite on track for that.
Secondly, on the reinsurance strategy, just thinking about it, it doesn't look very very obvious, because we keep on hearing that the reinsurers have been making losses even before COVID. They were making losses on this portfolio, and now we are increasing our retention rate quite significantly. So we are hinting that we, on our portfolio, reinsurers are making profits, and we believe that we want to make that profit on our own rather than passing on that benefit to reinsurers. Is the way that we are hinting?
Not really, Nidesh. I would hesitate to say that. All I'm saying is, and this is something that Kanan spoke about earlier and Amit also repeated, the way we looked at our experience of the portfolio, we broke it up into segments of where we were getting favorable experience and where we were not getting favorable experience. And we also looked at what we were also looking at is what was the proportion of business which was giving us the less favorable experience. So all that we have done is to cut the tail on those segments of business which were giving us more claims so that we could bring the experience back in line with the price. Like I've said before, whether it is my price or the reinsurer's price is less relevant. What is more important is how do we bring experience to line with price. And that's the reason why the offering that we are now making of the old term without return of premium product is going to be slightly different from who I was offering it to. So there are some segments that I'm letting consciously to ensure that claims are within the limit. So I'm not saying that reinsurers have not made a loss because of me, but I'm saying that I've got enough data from segments in the past to give me comfort that for those segments, I can underwrite it in a profitable fashion.
So, yeah, in that context...
May I request you to please rejoin the queue, sir?
Sure, okay.
Let me just finish this question. I think he's asking a supplementary question at the same point.
Go ahead. In that context, doesn't it make logical sense that pure protection, outside of ROP, will not see a very meaningful growth even next year because we will cut down some segments which were not profitable in the past.
So that's the interesting part of it, Nitesh. The size of the tail that was contributing to the core experience is actually not very large. So the loss of business because of cutting it is really not something we would worry about in the context of the opportunity. All that we have to do is to make sure that we are disciplined about not taking on those risks. So I don't think that this will affect the growth prospects. We are not in that way restricting the target market to say half of what it was before. That's not what we are doing. We are cutting the tail. It's a small tail in volume, but a thick tail in terms of experience.
So that is the analysis we had really made before we went to the board committee. Look at, I mean, it's a natural question by any board saying that if you cut that tech hit, how much of business hit you are going to take. So that was really something which is very manageable by us. And just look at the base, you know, today of retail protection. So we do believe that from here on, it can only be one way, which is the way up. So those are the couple of, you know, analysis which we did. We are very confident. And also, you know, one area which probably we don't focus a lot on is that even we talked about retail protection and so on, we have backfilled it quite well through the credit life and group term business, which has really helped us during this period, even as our retail was still struggling on a year-on-year degrowth because of various reasons. We have been able to manage the overall protection growth of 22% through that. I think that is something which probably we don't spend so much time. We get all of us sort of focus so much on retail protection and the price increase that we have been able to work on the other areas to significantly bring the overall or at least mitigate the risk arising out of low volumes in retail protection. Another area what we have done is really if you really look at the non-protection businesses and the non-linked products, there we have been able to work a lot in terms of enhancing the margins by you know, elongating the tenures and so on. I think today the confidence we have in our margin or the overall VNB story is that we have multiple levers available. So and also in some of the cases we have done increase the attachment of riders. So while yes, we were talking a lot in the public about retail protection because that is retail protection and the price increase because that is the flavor of the day, we worked systematically on various aspects of our business, non-linked, how to increase the margins, how to bring in attachments of riders to increase. In protection, how do we increase our pricing in retail, in group credit life, how to increase the pricing in group term and still get the volumes up. I think those are, you know, 5-6 things which we don't discuss much because the discourse got too much carried away by retail protection during this period. So today I would say, you know, to summarize, the kind of levers which are available to us, both from channel perspective and the product perspective, to aid our growth aspiration on VNB is much more in there today compared to what was there 3 years back. That assurance I want to give you all.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ajok Fedrix for Unifi Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir. Sir, as long as I have known ICICI Prudential as a cautious and a conservative firm, because be it non-par, we took our time to come in, be it long-term products, we took our time. Price hike on protection, we passed it completely last year. But right now I'm seeing a pretty aggressive stance across board, be it IRR rates or protection retention rates. So what is giving us this shift in stance? If you can touch upon your capability increase or the document aggregator you're talking about. So apart from the usual topics that you have already discussed, what else is giving us the confidence?
Yeah, so first question, I would say that our approach of being cautious, and especially when it comes to risk management, hasn't changed at all. That I want to assure you that suddenly it's not that we have become aggressive and then doing various things.
Yeah.
I will request Satyan to talk about the issue around the logic for retention, but I would like to say the IRR rate, which we talked about, is based on full coverage of our ability to execute this rate based on the cash instrument plus derivative. So what we do is that every quarter we go to the board and we tell them that what is the rate which we are able to execute with the cash plus derivative on the book, which is being sold in that particular month, versus what is promised to the customers. Without that, we don't do that business. And you have seen the rate going up, and we have seen certain movements in the financial markets. Because of that, we have been able to pass the rate. Even now, we may not be extremely competitive when it comes to our IRR of competitors, but so be it. That is our approach towards what IRR we want to promise in the non-linked business. Coming to retention again, the approach we have taken is that in a particular portfolio, which is greater than 1 crore, if the experience is so good that we don't require reinsurance, why part the profits with the reinsurer? Reinsurers are required for an area which is like a catastrophe where there is a lot of, the loss given default is very high, or in an area where, we require their presence because we are not yet sure of the full emergence of mortality. Those are the two situations where we require their presence much more. So what we have done is that, as Satyan mentioned earlier, a certain percentage of business we have cut out because the mortality experience was adverse. So to that extent, it didn't entail any cross-subsidization with other businesses or increasing the pricing in the other segments. That is one part we have done. Another part we have done is that we looked at the 1 crore above portfolio. We are very happy with retaining it because of the kind of mortality emergence which has been there in the portfolio in the past. And that is the basis on which we have done. So any such move will continue to be guided by our framework of being cautious and at the same time ensuring we take the market realities into account and ensure that we do it in a sensible manner. Satyan, you want to just elaborate anything on IRR setting as well as the retention philosophy beyond what I mentioned? Thank you.
So Kannan, I was off the call for a bit, so I didn't pick up all of it.
Satyan, if you can touch upon the technology piece a bit, because you guys have showcased your ability there. And I'm assuming that is also helping you in pricing the risk in a much better fashion. So some color on that document aggregator, or is that helping you a lot? So on that side of it.
Yeah, so I will have Satyan supplement, but essentially the way we looked at during this phase are two things. One, we have some kind of friction on the ground to do the fulfillment because of the pandemic triggered environment. On the other side, we are seeing a huge transformation when it comes to payment and financial ecosystem. You've seen the payments, the way it is going, the aggregators, account aggregators and so on coming in. We thought we should combine these two, and that's how we came with this, you know, how to make it smooth without asking customer for too many things, how based on his approval and what is available in the ecosystem, how we can issue the policy in a seamless manner. So that customer convenience has been a motivator to come with these kind of solutions. And, you know, to answer more comprehensively our technology initiatives, I would request Satyan to come in now. Satyan, go ahead.
Sure. So the entire technology piece has been premised on, like Kanan said, at the first level from a protection business point of view, how can we analyze our book and experience better to improve the way we are doing risk management and pricing? And that's what we have been describing multiple times through the conversation today. The second part of the technology initiative has been around integrating with ecosystems, like Kanan said, to reduce the friction of onboarding to the extent that it is possible. But clearly at this point of time, it is also contingent on the customer giving consent. As the entire payment ecosystem evolves and as the account aggregator system evolves, I would expect that to further ease the entire documentation and verification process as far as our own assessment of an individual's earning capacity or a demographic profile are concerned. So as we go ahead, I would only expect the ecosystem information and integration to further ease the way onboarding happens. And clearly, as we capture more and more information about customers, our ability to segment them further and then feed that back into a more customized pricing stroke underwriting process is what will actually set us apart from others.
Got it. That's very helpful, Teek. Thanks. All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sukumar from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. Coming back again to insurers' retention strategy. So with our retention strategy now moving to 1 crore plus, and we are targeting more better demographic customers. So are we also changing our mortality assumptions? If that's so, does the current pricing takes account for that, and are the pricing is margin neutral? Any thoughts on that?
So here, the assumption is finally an outcome. The way it is stacking up today is there is a price I'm offering. There is an expected mortality for the underlying segment that is suited for that price. Given that these two are a good fit, we are choosing to retain what we are retaining and offer the price that we are offering. Assumptions eventually will be set once these elements of experience start to crystallize. If the experience emerges as we expect it to, then from a profitability point of view, with the retention strategy and with the pricing strategy that we have now deployed on the ground, we expect the portfolio margins to be at similar levels to what it was before and not be reduced. So that's really the objective. Protect margins, ensure that the price and the expected mortality outcome are in sync given the underwriting that we want to deploy and the target market that we want to cater to.
Okay. Thank you. That's all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Swarnam Mukherjee from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity again. One quick question on the cost side. So your cost ratios, because, you know, as you mentioned, the additional manpower hiring and technology investment, they're a bit elevated compared to where it was last year. So I was wondering what has been baked into the EV calculations and the assumptions were set at the end of the last year. And because of these higher cost ratios, do we expect to see any kind of negative impact of, say, operating variance or assumption changes that may happen when EV gets computed towards the end of the year?
So, Swarnab, the expense ratios as we report them, which is the cost to total weighted received premium, whether we like it or not, is a bit of a composite measure, which has in the numerator costs and in the denominator all premiums including renewal premium. In reality, when we set assumptions for expenses, or when we measure the cost of acquisition of a business, it is more related to new business. And when we measure maintenance cost of a business, it is more related to in-force book. And therefore, from what we are seeing in the current year, while this ratio that you are observing is becoming higher, given that the cost increase is actually less than the new business growth increase, we don't expect any adverse implication from margin point of view arising out of cost.
Okay, all right. And I mean, this is also in sync with the assumption that has been set, right?
So that the margins that we have reported for 9 months for them are based on 9 months of actual cost and 3 months of projected cost. When we do full year reporting next quarter, it will be based on the full actual cost for the year. There will be no expense overruns.
Okay, sir. Got it. Thank you so much. That's all from me.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you. Thank you once again to everyone for joining the call and asking these questions. I do hope that my team and I have answered most of your questions satisfactorily. In case anything else is pending or you would like further clarifications, please feel to reach out my team or me anytime. Thank you once again. Have a good evening. Good night. Bye.
Thank you. On behalf of ICICI Prudential Life Insurance, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.